show is a proud member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where do you keep all the 3D movies around here? I'm looking for the one with the two geeks.
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here are your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. This is a special interview we have with Neil and Matt from In3. If you're a first-time listener to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I am Chuck Tomasi, and with me is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm good, and I'm in 3D. Or not yet. Maybe they'll make me 3D.
We're not going to make it in your face, Technorama, tonight.
Maybe they'll develop a podcast audio 3D plug-in thing.
We look like we're coming right at you.
Yeah. Don't let my hand hit you in the face.
When we get a video podcast, we'll work on that. What we don't want to work on is helping other people out. Well, we do want to help them out, but we don't want to make it a work. And that's where you really need something like GoToAssist, because everybody who comes directly at you with their support problems. Oh, we're not going to beat this into the ground tonight, trust us. We're just having fun with it at the beginning of the show.
I was going with it. I kind of like it.
They come right at you with their problems, and they're in your face. And you can use GoToAssist to see what's on their screen, whether it's in 3D or not. Feel like you're really there. Get that real in-life support experience. See what's on their screen.
Have the user poke you in the side.
And you can hit them with a baseball bat. Yeah. It's a keyboard! No, that you need to use GoToAssist for remote screen sharing, file transfers, chat. It's all done over 128-bit SSL encrypted lines, so you know it's secure. It's from the people that bring you the other Citrix products. Go to MyPC, go to Meeting, go to Webinar, the Citrix ICA things for doing remote computing. They've been around for a long time. They've been doing this. They know what they're doing. GoToAssist is one in a great family of products. You can try it free for 30 days by going to GoToAssist.com/podcast. That's GoToAssist.com/podcast for your free 30-day trial and put those 3D problems in perspective. Wow, yeah. That's kind of catchy. Just made that up.
Stop touching me.
Into the interview. With us tonight, we have Neil and Matt from In3. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hi there.
How are you tonight?
Yeah, we're doing great.
All right, let's start out. Tell us a little bit about yourselves and In3.
Well, this is Neil speaking. I am in the industry from the post-production side. I actually have a post-production facility also down in Dallas. And my background is engineering, but what I've been involved with most of my career is giving creative people the tools to do their creative work in the most transparent way without worrying about the technology behind the scenes to make it happen.
Sounds a bit like Apple.
Oh, that would they're certainly a great company to aspire to as a model, sure.
Yeah, and my name is Matt DeJohn. I started at the company as an artist and kind of scratched and clawed my way up. Now I'm dealing with producing the shows that we have coming through the facility.
We're going to talk a little bit about more about the shows in just a bit. What exactly does In3 do? Because I look at your website and I see all kinds of terms that just boggle my mind. I mean, it could be quantum mechanics for all I know. There's stereography and previs and dimensionalization, and I'm going, wow, that's sounds cool.
I couldn't get past the and the these.
Well, we actually have pioneered something that's quite new and hasn't been embraced yet by the rest of the industry. But the basic idea is that we can create very high quality stereo images from single camera flat original material, which means that we could convert any old movie that you like or any new movie, but it wouldn't require the traditional rigs that are used to create stereo, which are usually two cameras that are mounted side by side or by a beam splitter. And we approach the creation of the stereo as a post-production process. It gives the creative person all the control that they are used to now in making a modern film or video production. And this is a new tool. This is something that's not been available before. And so we've had to pioneer some new terms and all. So I can understand why some of it might sound like quantum theory.
That's fine.
So a stereo image from a single image. The first thing that comes to mind is one of these effects that I've been seeing. I'm sure you're familiar with the Ken Burns effect, where they take a still image and they kind of pan or zoom slowly to give the illusion of some kind of animation. What I've seen lately is almost where they take some of the characters and make
like
them foreground.
Cutout.
Yeah. And then as you're panning, it looks like they're in stereo. Is that similar to what you're talking about?
Well, what's interesting you bring that up, because actually there are a lot of what we would call 2D cues that give your mind the ability to create a three-dimensional feeling. But no, what we're talking about is the ability to actually see depth where the left eye and the right eye are getting separate information as if you were there looking at it with both eyes open. The Ken Burns effect, though, is a very easy one for us to do with the tools we've got.
When I think of 3D movies, and I'm probably showing my age here, I think of the red and blue glasses or the polarized lenses. Do you require any special viewing, things like that, for your productions?
Well, we create the content. However, there's really no satisfactory solution that doesn't require the use of glasses. However, the glasses we're talking about today are not your father's 3D. And there's actually three different systems that have been deployed in the cinemas. All of them have very, very high quality. But yes, you do wear glasses, but they're lightweight. And they're really nothing more than sunglasses in some cases, or very lightweight shutter glasses. But they're going to be essential if you want to see high quality 3D, at least for the next decade or two.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So are they kind of like the ones like you see at Disney or whatnot? They're polarized, or is it polarized?
There's three different designs. The most popular one right now is a great company called Real D. I'm sure you've seen local theaters that use their system. And the glasses are very lightweight. They're polarized. They're actually circularly polarized lenses. Mm-hmm. But the glasses really look like sunglasses. And they're giveaways. You can recycle them if you like. But they're cheap enough to be given away. But when you go in those theaters, the screens have to maintain the polarization. So the screens are different slightly than the flat screens that you might watch a 2D movie on. Mm-hmm. So another approach, which is more popular overseas right now, is to put the shuttering mechanism right in your glasses. And therefore, you don't have to change the screen at all. You just have an infrared pulse that synchronizes so that when the left image is up on the screen, the left eye is open, and then it goes back and forth, left, right, left, right. Hmm. And there's even a third system, which comes from friends at Dolby. Mm-hmm. And it uses glasses that are very, very sensitive color filters. So the left and the right eyes get separate images, but again, the screen doesn't have to be changed. So they all have their advantages and disadvantages, but all of the systems will give you a very satisfying 3D experience when you go to the theater.
Yeah. Now, when I guess somebody approaches you with a project, do they specify what kind of technology they're shooting for, or do you kind of, I don't know, just kind of figure it out as you go? Our
content will run on any of the systems, but it's always a good idea for them to tell us what they plan to do. Mm-hmm. Not so much for the system, but for the size of the screen. If you look on our website, you'll see there's some information. You can't just simply take something that was what we would call depth graded for, let's say, a 40-foot screen and then blow it up to a 70-foot screen. Without some severe problems. So okay. We would like to know that. We can solve the problems if we know what size screen this is going on. But it's that can be problematic. Now, going the opposite way, scaling down is not so bad. But then you lose some of the dramatic impact of the 3D when you go to the smaller screen. Again, we can address that. We can fix that.
I got one more question. Me and Chuck were kind of discussing this before we got you guys on the phone. And we were talking about how I'd recently saw the movie Up, you know, and it was in 3D. But the 3D was like subtle enough where it was like part of the movie. Almost didn't, you know, it was, I didn't really, it wasn't a spectacle. It was part of the movie. Is that what y'all shoot for, or how? Or I guess that's another thing.
You actually hit it right on the head. For to watch a two-hour movie, the idea is not to make it a theme park ride. Mm-hmm. I like to call. Well, you can't. You're going to get a headache after 10 minutes in a theme park ride because there's gags and everything coming at you, and these violate very well-known rules that you don't want to violate. Once you get eye fatigue or a headache, it's hard for it to go away. So we don't want that to happen ever. I like to call what we do surround sound for your eyes. And the idea being exactly what you said. You don't go to the movie because it's you're expecting a 3D experience. You go to the movie just the same way you would choose a surround sound theater over a stereo theater. It's a more immersive experience. It's a more interesting experience. But you shouldn't be concentrating on the 3D. It really should become transparent, and the story, as always, should carry the real reason you're in that theater.
I win.
What?
No. I said that it would be more enjoyable if you're traveling down the highway. The scene is of a car chase or something, and the car crashes, you may see a few parts fly off the screen, but not, you know, tires coming at you.
Some movies are going to want to do we call those gags. And done, you know, respectfully, let me put it that way, they work great because it's in contrast. But if every second you're being bombarded, then you lose the impact, you get annoyed. And it's not natural. I mean, the idea of a movie is the suspension of disbelief. Mm-hmm. And the reason that you have these creative people like Peter Jackson and James Cameron, George Lucas and Robert Zemeckis, you know, all these guys who are the top storytellers in film are embracing 3D because they see the advantage to the audience of drawing them into the story more. But not one of them would say this is, you know, going to be used as a gimmick or some way to make up for a bad movie. It's not the idea at all.
Yeah, Lord of the Rings wouldn't have been the same if they went, "Ooh, it's the ring," and wave it in your face. You know, like it was funny. It was funny at Disney when the Muppets, you know, would wave something in your face because it was a 10-minute feature, and that was part of the Muppet charm. But not in a full-length feature.
Yeah, Mystery Science Theater might enjoy it.
See, I was thinking more of Creature from the Black Lagoon. You know. Where he's like waving his hand in your face or a spear. Let's see. Go ahead, Chuck.
Well, to stand out, you have to set yourself apart from the others your competitors. What do you do what's your differentiator?
Well, first off, you have to realize we've been at this quite some time. In fact, we started doing the R&D as a very small R&D company. Oh, in 1999, and we filed and we actually received 6 different patents already on our process. So we're software developers as well as the artists and the creative people to pull this off. We didn't know if it was going to work. Our goal was to convince a George Lucas or James Cameron that what they were seeing was as good as if they had shot it in the traditional mode. And that's a very high bar. We had to be perfect. And it wasn't until about 2004 that we actually went in front of George while he was still working on the third episode of Star Wars. And he was blown away. He said, you know, I've seen a lot of people try what you're doing. And you're the first ones to do it. And I don't want you guys leaving here until everybody has seen this. And then I want a system of my own. And then I want to show it to my friends.
Mm-hmm. So that's, he actually high praise from him. Yeah. I mean, the guy who came up with ILM.
Whoa, slow down, George. You're pushing us too hard.
No, and that was very gratifying, but that was our whole point. We cannot compromise quality. So where we feel we're distinctive, first, as you've seen, we've pioneered a bunch of terms and abilities and tools that are really not available anywhere else because it's our software, it's proprietary. But that's just, you know, for now. The real key is getting that high quality at a cost that's attractive to studios or anybody for that matter. And that's a tough thing to do. There are a lot of people now who say they can do what we're doing, and we wish them all well. We know how hard it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm curious about your workflow. You know, whether how does that differ from like when you're working with like live action films versus maybe computer animation, like we talked about Up, where the whole thing's computer, or a mix like the G-Force movie.
Let Matt handle that.
Yeah. So this is Matt here, and well, I'll start with the full CG movies like Up. In that kind of situation, you have this virtual environment where all the different elements of the scene are built out in a virtual world, and you have perfectly accurate camera. And essentially what they do is they create another camera that represents your other eye. And so that's really their workflow is...
And they have multiple cameras as well.
Yeah, they may have multiple cameras as well, but for all intents and purposes, they're setting up the other perspective and making sure that the offset is right for the 3D effect that they want to achieve. And they can, as Neil was talking about, also set up multiple sets of those cameras so they can have the depth just right for different layers. So that's the CG kind of workflow. And then for live action workflow, at least with the dimensionalization process, we essentially will, there's three major phases of the process. One phase is where you define all the elements. And so that's either rotoscope or keying methods like green screen and stuff like that. And that's to separate out your major layers of depth. And then you have a secondary phase, which is basically a paint phase. When you're creating a new perspective, you're actually kind of looking around foreground objects and you're seeing more of the background than was originally captured. And so you have to recreate all that image information back there. So it's essentially like painting out the foreground people in every single shot. So that's another phase, the paint phase. And then our special sauce is really the depth phase. And that's where we take all these different elements and we create the shape of the people's face. We position them in space. We give it a little perspective here and there, essentially modeling out the scene. And that creates the new perspective with all the detail that we've put into it.
Mm-hmm. It's probably good to think about how, in the case of live action, has been captured in the past in stereo. You generally have rigs, two cameras, spaced approximately 65 millimeters or 2.5 inches, the spacing of an adult's eyes. Mm-hmm. But the cameras can move and be adjusted. But they're mounted side by side, or they're mounted in using beam slivers so they can get the cameras closer. But the general idea is to try to capture what two eyes would see. You have limited ability to deal with problems on the set in that situation. You have basically the choice of your camera lens, the cameras themselves, placement of what's going on in the scene. But basically, the challenge is what you see is what you get. And one of the limitations is if you have a foreground and a background object that you want to call attention to. You really have a lot of difficulty with this type of approach just from the physics. When you look at animation, they're not limited by that. As I pointed out, they can set up multiple virtual cameras so they can get the foreground, the background, the middle ground, whatever they want, they can get perfect. And that's why it's so pleasing to watch a movie like Up. Which, by the way, I hope you're aware that the depth in that movie was modulated to coincide with the emotional impact that they wanted in the scene.
And that's no, I wasn't aware of that. No.
Yeah, this is a new thing, and it's I think we'll learn more as people experiment with it. But actually, you know, characters could be blockier or smoother or have more depth to them, all timed, and there's an actual depth script that coincides when they were putting that together. Wow. And these are all new kinds of concepts. And you can't do that if you now apply that to live action. However, you can do it if you dimensionalize, which is our trademark name for what we do. Mm-hmm. Essentially, what we do is give the creative person complete control over every single object in the scene if necessary. It's not always necessary, but there's no limitation on how we place the objects. And if you were to see our demo, you could see the same scene, let's say, from a Star Wars battles when we show, five different ways, and they're all right. They're all correct, but they emphasize different things. The battleships are closer to you in one scene, and the planet is behind you, or, you know, we show the producer and the director, they now have that same creative flexibility that they've been used to when they've done their 2D effects. And that's the big breakthrough in this approach, and probably why you will see a lot more of the live action movies use these tools.
Are there any differences or assets or liabilities, pros, cons, whatever you want to call them, between the considerations that you have to take in on the big screen versus a DVD feature later, for example?
It's funny you bring that up. We actually did some experiments here when the first of the what they call 3D ready sets came out, which Mitsubishi and Samsung, they were generally about 61 inches, and we got one of these sets. And so we took some material that we had dimensionalized for the big screen, and we looked at it on the small screen. Then we actually dimensionalized that same screen. We thought we were optimizing it for the smaller screen. Mm-hmm. And we did a number of combinations to figure out what's going to happen when this goes into the home and people are watching at home. And we have these results. I think they're on our website for anyone who's interested. But the key is this. If you shoot for, let's say, or you make your depth decisions on a 40-foot screen, and you then scale it down, it's only going to be on a 5-foot screen. Everything, if all you do is go smaller, everything compresses down, and you lose a lot of what you could put in to the home experience.
Mm-hmm.
But and you could, and we hope people will think about that and probably do a pass that's more appropriate. But it still works. It's fine. Again, as I said earlier, though, if you go the opposite way, if you were to somehow to blow it up, if you did something that was purely for the DVD in home and then thought you were going to blow it up on a big screen, you would get eye fatigue because your eyes would be forced to diverge. That would not work at all.
That's interesting that you say that. The analogy that comes to mind is mixing audio for a concert, for example, versus for a studio if you were a musician. You're not going to be able to use the same audio settings for those two different venues.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. The thing is, when we dimensionalize, we have all of that, all the information, so we can process for the size of the screen if we're asked to, because all that is part of our metadata. And again, this is a new tool. This is a new idea, and since it's still early in the game, quite honestly, there really isn't a home theater environment yet. Even though the sets are ready, there's no Blu-ray 3D format. So we're still, you know, thinking about what this is going to mean when it happens.
We're working on that.
Yeah. Hey, well, you know, you said you have all this information. I kept thinking, how much storage do you guys need for a feature or for the stuff you work on? How do you store all this data?
What does the tech behind the scenes look like in terms of servers and storage arrays and that kind of thing? We like to take our listeners behind the scenes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's really not as bad as you'd think. When you do like a CG feature, you have hundreds and hundreds of terabytes that you need, and the render times are astronomical, you know, hundreds of thousands of hours. Up to millions of hours to render out a CG movie. For us, we really get away with, you know, about 20 terabytes worth of storage for a project. And that's really because we're attacking this whole process in a procedural fashion. Like Neil's talking about, we save all the metadata. And so really at the end of the day, we have the original images, which is however many terabytes, and we have the final images, and that's however many terabytes. And there's some stages in between, but that really does keep our storage to a minimum. But even so, we have, you know, very high grade servers and all that good stuff to make it as fast as possible.
Sure, come on, sure. we want names and things of your servers, model numbers.
Yeah, no.
we gotta get Tom in here, all right? But he'll say it's a lot of spit and baling wire too.
Yeah.
Oh. We say we need more storage. He has to figure out what am I gonna do now.
Yeah, right.
Run out to Best Buy, get him a couple more terabyte drives.
Yeah exactly. Well,
I have a question. Y'all were talking about George Lucas was, you know, jumping up and down about y'all's technology. I heard, a while back that they were working on a 3D version of Star Wars. Is that a project to you guys?
Well, George Lucas, when he saw our stuff, there was nobody who could do it at that time. And he also got us in touch with Peter Jackson. It was actually Peter Jackson who suggested to us that we do a show in front of the exhibitors. This was back in 2005. And the idea was that he wanted to show that the exhibitors, if they adopt to digital, as almost a freebie, get the ability to show high-quality 3D. So he suggested that to George that we show the Star Wars material. That was our material that we mm-hmm. did. And Jim Cameron also participated in this show. This was in March of 2005. He showed live-action material from Terminator, Riot he did, and you know, Aliens of the Deep and all. And during the course of that show, George got up in front of the audience. He actually did the show for us. We were sitting out in the audience.
Wow.
And this was 1 month before The Empire Strikes Back came out. And he basically got up in front of this audience, which was mostly theater owners and studio execs, and he said, you know, you're not done with me yet because I plan to dimensionalize all six episodes of Star Wars.
Ooh.
We just about fell out of our chair. He didn't tell us anything about this. But then when we spoke with him, he said, yes, he absolutely is going to do it, but he wants 5,000 3D-equipped screens before it happens. So the answer is the plan is there. We hope we'll get a chance to do it. It's certainly the case that ILM and others could do it. But as far as I know, it's not in actual process yet because we're not even at 2,000 theaters yet. We're not even halfway there.
Hmm. I thought you were going to say we're at 4,998 and there's two holdouts.
No, I mean, his idea was actually addressing a problem that's occurring right now. There are not enough theaters for all of the projects that are available or in the pipeline. Mm-hmm. And so now you're battling out who gets access to the theaters that are there. This is not a good thing. We need to get those theaters online, and then you'll really see a 3D proliferate.
Government subsidies.
Right, yes. Why didn't we think of that?
Let's expand the cash for clunkers.
What a concept.
Turn in your 35mm projection.
Oh, boy.
Now we're getting into it.
Yeah. So what other projects do you have working on? I know one of the big ones you just finished, or just released, I guess, was GeForce, right?
Yeah, GeForce, I'm going to let Matt talk about it, but that's a unique project because it was a hybrid. Mm-hmm. The if you've seen it, the guinea pigs and the mole and the fly and the cockroaches, all those great CG characters were done by Sony Imageworks. But mm-hmm. all of the live action, all of the actors, all of the real scenes were shot single camera, and we converted them and dimensionalized them. We combined the two together. That's not been done before.
And that's what led me to ask you earlier, what was the workflow between, you know, live action or mix or whatever, because I knew that y'all had done that. That's fantastic.
Yeah, so we worked really, really tightly with Sony Imageworks, and, we handled a large portion of the footage, and the real trick was making sure their stuff looked like our stuff at the end of the day. So you could cut from a shot of the guinea pig to a shot of a person, and the nature of the depth looks similar. And right. I think we really effectively did it.
How long did it take to do that process?
Oh, shoot. We started we started with a schedule of about 6 months, and we were ready to do it all in 6 months. And then it didn't really get spun up until about 3 months to the end. And that's when we really did most of our work.
Wow.
So it was a pretty quick process. And not necessarily the timeline we wanted, but we had to work some long hours.
Mm-hmm. So what, do they start shuffling footage to you as it's coming out of post to get you to start? How does that work? Are you involved in the process as they're you know, compositing, doing all that stuff, or how's, where y'all fit in exactly?
Well, in terms of the straight live action stuff, we started getting that as soon as the editor locked his cut, or at least more or less locked his cut. Mm-hmm. There were some shots that we would handle the live action element for, and another company would handle the CG stuff for. And what they would do is they would render a temp version of the CG, let's say, you know, a holographic graphic.
Right.
They would render a temp version of that, and then we would dimensionalize the live-action plate to match. And then we would send the live-action left and right eye to them, and they would finish up the comp and add in the CG stuff.
That
so that's an example. Go ahead.
Boggles my mind when you think about all the things that have to agree to make it work.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, a lot of integration. There's about...
Starting with the attorneys. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, but this is the challenge for a live-action movie that has a lot of effects. So I think the real lesson in G-Force was that, one, we showed how it could be done, but we learned how to make this effective in other applications as well.
So what's in the pipeline right now? You mentioned a few things, if you're at liberty to say.
I wish I was.
are there any trailers out there right now that you have a hand in?
No, we didn't do any work.
No, we can't say.
okay, I understand. I was just thinking if there was.
Hey, Chuck, yeah. Spin up the PayPal account. Well, I'm curious. Where do you want to take 3D? I mean, I'm thinking like, you know, at the holodeck on Star Trek, that kind of thing, where you actually feel it. Where do y'all want to take 3D?
That's interesting. First off, when we started this, our model was that we were going to dimensionalize all the great movies in the world's libraries, and that itself would be, you know, a formidable task.
Hook up with Ted Turner and colorize them all while you're at it.
Well, we're very sensitive that people sometimes equate this to colorization, but it's not true. It's not correct. One of the big differences is that when you see what we do, we establish one of the eyes, left or right, as the original material, and we don't touch it. So the original movie could be the right eye, and then we create everything in the left eye. So it's not like we've added anything. We've just brought out what's already there.
Sure, okay.
But we know that there's some who – because we've seen the debate. You know, some people say, oh, yeah, it's good. You could do that movie, but you shouldn't touch a classic, you know. You shouldn't touch Casablanca, which we actually...
For some reason, that's what I had in mind first. That's really weird.
Yeah.
You did that one? You did on your own?
No.
Early on, when we were just testing out, we did the last 5 minutes just for in-house. Hmm. And that was in the days when we had artifacts and all kinds of things. And it's interesting because if you come here and we'll show you our demo, some of the things we can't really show elsewhere... we have very high resolution material the studios have sent to us for tests, you know, see what the limitations are, et cetera, et cetera. But at the very end, we put up this Casablanca piece, and everybody loves that the best, even though in our opinion it's the worst quality because it's 5 years old.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
But it tells a very interesting point. People love that story. They identify with that story. They identify with the characters. And where are you going to see these characters lifelike, other than in Madame Tussauds Wax Museum. So we're open to the debate. If somebody feels that they're a purist and this is a movie that shouldn't be touched, we say let the public decide, and then we'll see. Because our experience has been just the opposite. Everybody says, when can I see that?
Yeah. Well, you know, when they were started colorizing films, and I was half joking there, but, you know, when they started colorizing, he was showcasing them on TV, I thought it was, you know, you can go watch the original film. It's still available. I was curious to see how they interpreted it with the color. And I would be probably doubly interested to see how things were interpreted with the, you know, with dimensionalization.
Well, I'm going to tell you a tale. I can't identify the person. It's too famous. But we were called to do a demo many years ago for a director you all know. Mm-hmm. And he was very impressed by our work and everything. And at the end, we actually showed him the Casablanca, and he said, well, you know what, guys, that was incredible. I don't know how you did that. But you know what? Certain movies shouldn't be touched, and that's one of them. So then we got into a little debate, and we talked about his movies, and we mentioned one of his movies. And we mentioned this particular movie because we actually had some stills that we had dimensionalized. And he said, well, you know, I can't really decide about that. And so we said, well, would you like to see what it might look like? He said, yeah. So we put him up. And at the end of showing him the clips from the movie, he said, I just don't understand how the hell you knew what it looked like. That's exactly the way it looked on the set. How'd you know? And that was the best compliment we've ever gotten. And that is exactly what we're after with what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Sweet. That's nice.
Good.
Oh, God.
I hear you. How far away do you think we are from not having any glasses at all?
That is a really good question. I can tell you that there are scores of people getting PhDs and elsewhere, especially in Korea and Japan, but in Germany and, of course, here in the United States, everywhere. This is the Holy Grail. It's a very, very difficult process, but every year you see improvements. So we'll get there. I think it's at least 10 years off. Mm-hmm. But if they do it sooner, that's all the better for us. Our content is is designed for anywhere. And a lot of people, or some people, think the glasses are an impediment. I don't think it is. I think that the problem that people associate with the glasses is like your earlier question where you mentioned red, green, the anaglyph glasses. Well, actually, there were no movies that were released in anaglyph. They were all polarized. But the anaglyph glasses were used in comic books, and a lot of people forgot that. And anaglyph is about the worst way to take a look at 3D. But I think what people say, you know, when they ask what we do, we're involved in 3D, the next question is, oh, do I have to wear those silly glasses? But I think what they're saying is, oh, do I have to get a headache? And they associate the glasses with giving him a headache. But it was the bad 3D that gave him the headache, and the glasses just allowed him to see it. So it's absolutely going to be wonderful when we don't have to wear glasses, but I don't think it's that much of an impediment when people see good 3D.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask I'm going to fight you for the last question then. What if somebody wanted to go into this arena, what would, I mean, should they be studying heavily in math? Because a lot of this stuff sounds computational and mathematical in nature. On the other side, a lot of it sounds very art and graphic artist kind of conceptual stuff.
Visual.
Yeah. Well, if you want to write software for us, you probably should be studying the math, but that's not required for the people who are doing the work at all.
Yeah, I mean, the people who are doing the work, they're VFX people from the industry. We need compositors, we need painters, we need roto guys. We can use guys who know how to do 3D modeling because that translates somewhat to our software.
You mean like mechanical engineer kind of 3D modeling?
No, they could probably do it too, but like computer animation, like the Pixar guys.
Okay.
So those guys could learn how to do what we do with our software. So it's artists, basically. Artists can do this process, and it breaks down pretty well for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, they could learn with an NDA, of course.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. We won't give them the secret until we hire them.
Yeah. Which I do have the last question. Do you guys dream in 3D?
Just like you dream in color, you dream in 3D.
That falling dream is really scary.
Yes, it is.
I'm flying. And on that note, I can't top that one.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Neil. Thank you, Matt. And it's been a pleasure talking to you. We hope to talk to you again after your next spectacular creation debuts.
The one you couldn't tell us about.
Yeah, sorry. It's not our desire, believe me.
Darn lawyers.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Have a good evening.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Hey, we appreciate your support. If you like the show, there are many ways to show your love. You can call the listener line. Let us know how you feel about this 3D experience podcast. 206-222-CHAT. That's 206-222-2428. Or email us, technorama@chuckchat.com. Visit the website, chuckchat.com, for all the other good stuff. There's several other podcasts there, too. Visit us on Twitter or Facebook. You know how to find us. Look us up, Chuck Tomasi or Craig Stepp. And, reviews on iTunes Music Store are always appreciated because that gives us a little love. Don't forget, we will be at Dragon Con, Atlanta, Georgia, Friday, September 4th, 10 p.m., room 204 at the Hilton. Hope to see you there if you're in the neighborhood. You can also stop by Sunday night, 8:30 p.m. We'll be on the panel for Comedy Forecast. Want to give a special thanks to all the people who donate their lovely time and talent to keep Technorama going. Mad Marv for all the great blog content. If you're not going to the blog on chuckchat.com regularly or subscribing to the news feed, what is wrong with you? We're going to need to like give you that virtual spear in the face in 3D.
The virtual slap in the face.
Ustream, who keeps our modest 2D live streams going on Sunday nights. We hope to see you there. Join us in the chat room and all the shenanigans that go on. That's a great time. The chat room is provided by freenode.net. We love it. You'll love it too. Makes its own gravy. No. If you're this show is a proud member of Friends in Tech. Find out more at friendsintech.com. Also affiliated with all the great podcasts over at Farpoint Media. What are they up to? About 2,000 different podcasts now?
2,001.
Oh.
It's something wonderful.
My God, it's full of stars. Oh, that was... I didn't even... just delete that part from the podcast. I didn't say that.
Okay.
You can find out all those at farpointmedia.net. That was a bad pun. I realized it after it got out. It's one of those things that's halfway out of your mouth and you go, no! I didn't say that.
Come back!
Until next time, tell a friend about Technorama, and as always, a binary high five.
What you want?
Whoa, that sounded like it was coming right at me.
What?